90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. I'm Paul Lieber. The name of the show is Why Poetry, and I am thrilled to have as our guest Beth Ruscio. She's going to be reading from a brilliant, soon-to-be-published manuscript, which is both funny, fresh, moving, and, of course, poetic. And hi, Beth.
Hi, Paul. Thank you.
For what?
For saying all that stuff you just said. That's just so nice.
Well, it's true. Could we start with you reading Anniversary of a Crime?
Definitely. Here we go. Every year, the same gift. He calls me when rates get cheap. Wakes me after 3, keeps me on the line for hours, burning it up, smoking like a mobster, until he's parched, white noise. No one hears anymore. Deaf people all over the place. Gone, I'll bet, that cashmere suit of his, the color of snow in a summer wait. Brash as gold flapping on a clothesline, so of course I fell for it. Let him bury his face in my strawberry hair, threw all my cards in with his, the pair of us, honeyed and uncontrite. What a confection of criminals we made. Just that now, with dawn coming on so tarnished, when he says, exhale, turning to static, sometimes night's the only shoulder I got left to cry on. Jesus, he's hard to take.
That's great.
In my life, people have called me and said, you know, hey, can I talk? And I just let them talk. So this isn't an actual verbatim conversation, but it's a kind of an amalgamation of the, you know, experience. People calling me, you know, they just got out of the bar, or they're, you know, they've had a bad dream, or somehow they just assume that I'm available.
I wish I had your number.
To talk to you. You do have my number. That's how you got me here.
Right. Beth Ruscio.
Yes.
Let me ask you what your first exposure to poetry was, or some element of it.
Well, I'm the daughter of actors and the granddaughter of actors, too, in fact. It goes back 6 generations. So,
gee.
I know. It's amazing we had time to have children, kids. And so there was a lot of poetry just in kind of everyday putting words together in a kind of, you know, obedience to the artful way of saying something. So, you know, we had Shakespeare in the house. We had Arthur Miller. You know, we had wonderful playwrights. And then we had my mother reading Robert Louis Stevenson's Child's Garden of Verses.
And when you were young?
When we were young, yeah. And then the first poet that I ever discovered, I thought, on my own was Sylvia Plath. So I got, when I was, I don't know what, 13, a copy of Ariel, and I read it, and it just felt so, you know, brutal and live, and, you know, she was already dead at that point. So just those two notions of this woman writing this book, and she had killed herself, and the stark power of these words. I remember memorizing one of the poems and doing it as a dramatic monologue.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one?
Daddy, Daddy, you bastard, I'm through.
Is that a long one?
It's, no. What's the name of that? That's just the last line. Daddy, I think, is the poem.
Huh. Do you still know it?
Well, I know that last line.
Okay.
I should have studied up.
Great. This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. I'm Paul Lieber, and we are privileged to hear Beth Ruscio. Beth, could you read Taken to the Soil?
I would love to.
This is all from her manuscript called Speaking Parts.
In late September, the ground he picked out warm yet, the boy lay down. His human days over, he had taken quite devoutly to the soil. Fall was heavy, drifts of rust, ballast for the voyage. He felt the knot in his stomach unspool, become taproot, his spine douse for loam. He let his lungs fill with spores, dust, the cast-off wings of insects. He matched his breath to the suck of the wind as glint ebbed to thrum, then hush. He let the earth hear him out. Each day, before school, his sister fills a bottle from the tap, carries it to him by the neck. Evenings, she scatters coffee grounds flecked with gleaming eggshells, and quietly, she stretches out next to him, their faces close as crossing lights.
Wow. It's gut-wrenching and moving. I'm hesitant to ask you anything about it.
Why not? Ask me.
Is it someone in particular?
You know, I was, as often happens, I mean, I'm a voracious reader of all kinds of poetry at this point. And I read a poem by Nance Van Winkle. In fact, I'm happy to give her some credit. In fact, I corresponded with her after I'd written this poem, and I showed it to her, and she was wild about it. So the poem of hers was called The Winter Cow. And it just was constructed in such a way, and so outlandish, the whole notion of the cow having a kind of agency over, you know, how it got milked and how it would die. So I took that notion and I grafted it onto, you know, there is somebody I know that was unsuccessful trying to commit suicide, and...
Well, I'm happy about that.
Yeah, yes, I was too. But there's a, you know, there's a kind of conversation I'm having with that event in my life, and I think other people's lives, and, you know, the way in which you fight it and you recover from it, from somebody having killed themselves, and or in the case of this poem, you know, you help them.
Beth, could you read up Matchbooks, Phone Booths, and The Lost of Nicodels?
In those days, when somebody famous yanked open the bar's side door off Melrose, spilling a rectangle of sunny rebuke on us unknowns ripening in Nicodel's night for day ambience, we looked up, without looking up, slitting our eyes to the light. We were dark-clothed theater rats, rehearsing all hours in our black box empty spaces on our wageless farce, our German expressionism, all our daylight eaten, not from around here, pale, funhouse sweaty, with thirst to burn, but seated in a place like Nicodel's, in old Hollywood, on the slightly seedy side, down from local television station KCAL, and spooned by the back lot of Paramount Studios. In the hierarchy of regulars, we had rank. We wanted for nothing. Nicodel's, with a name like Loose Change, where dream makers on martini lunches and newscasters from the desert to the sea to all of Southern California, like Jerry Dunphy, could talk into one of the bar's red leather booths and dine in the cocktail atmosphere, where good old nobodies could have a completely appointed experience exchanging numbers inside midnight blue matchbooks that boasted of air conditioning, a smoky topaz back-mirrored bar, Caesar salads tossed tableside, shoestring potatoes, salty hot, dark wood, Dark Corners, 15 different bourbons. Back when drinking in the daytime was the mark of a vivid, lush life, when you could pick up matchbooks by the handful next to the cigarette machine on the way to the phone booth, acting like you had somebody who loved you, dying for a call. Yeah, see, that kind of goes with that other poem. This is the guy that goes calls, you know, from McAdell's.
Right.
Goes calls me in the middle of the night.
He called you from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been there, but, you know, you can't get matchbooks anymore.
You can't get cigarettes phone booths.
Someone gave me a Cuban cigar, and I hadn't smoked one in a really long time, and
wow.
I was trying to get a matchbook from somewhere. I couldn't get one.
No.
God, and also in your car, which I hadn't realized, there's no lighter.
No, it's just a UCB plug now.
I know.
It's quite scandalous. I know. My mother, who was a longtime smoker but quit finally, but she persisted in, you know, being, you know, militant about people being allowed to smoke, and she also was so in love with the smell of smoke that she would light cigarettes and leave them in ashtrays like incense.
I'm Paul Lieber. The name of the show is Why Poetry, and we are listening to Beth Ruscio. Beth Ruscio, do you approach reading your poetry in the same way that you approach doing a part?
The beauty of having written my own poetry is to be a mouthpiece for, you know, I mean, I began to feel like I was, you know, advocating for things that were inartful, that were not, you know, that the lines that I was being given to read, especially sometimes in television, were so prosaic and so, you know, I mean, I was always suffering, or I was always just overly concerned about, you know, my girlfriend, like, do you think he really loves you? Maybe you should call the police, things like that. So it's marvelous for me to have words that I can stand behind to say. And in terms of saying them, you know, I mean, there is such a thing as over-dramatizing a poem. I certainly wouldn't want to do that. I kind of want the poem to exist without me, in fact. I want it to read on the page and have its own kind of life lift off the page. But when I read, it comes from the same impulse. I am trying to channel the voice not being heard, the voice of the poem, in the same way that when I write a poem, I'm not trying to force it to be something. I'm trying to find out what the poem wants to be, what it wants to say. That's kind of been the most sophisticated and adult thing that I've learned being a poet. I mean, there's many others, but that's one of them. It's like, you know, Cinderella's sisters kind of trying to force their, you know,
right.
misshapen feet into a glass slipper. You can't, you know, you need to find the right thing, and you need to, you know, put your ear down to the ground and listen hard. I think Anne Sexton said that. Listen hard for what the poem wants to be when it grows up.
Right. It's the same thing with children.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have an agenda, forget it. It's not going to play out.
Yeah. They can sense it, right? Because they're going to, you know, sabotage it if they possibly can.
This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. I'm Paul Lieber, and the name of the show is Why Poetry, and we're listening to Beth Ruscio. And Beth, could you read Summer Calling?
Certainly. This is about a play that we did at Padra, a John O'Keefe play, and it's dedicated to him, actually. One season, we played nuns enough to get the feel. Novice actresses yoked to made-up vows. We bore the marks of wool for weeks, our skin mercerized in the sunny rehearsal heat. Black gabardine, white chally, black headkerchiefs, the rubbed raw badges, the costumes chafed onto our thighs, our wimple-rashed cheeks. Tested, the long pent-up day of pretend vocation, no lesser devotion. We were cut loose in a red clay field, the cooling sacrament, dusk, told to write loud on a clean red slate. We formed a kick line, a can-can in reverse, receding as we curtsied, singing close, a choir of showgirls charming the fat moon to rise. We of the cloth gone the way of soft rags, of unanswered rosaries, attended a July reunion, and up we popped, in unison, as sisters do, forgetting time, as if strings never untied from habits. First we lifted our pretend skirts, our arms akimbo, just so, then, without a sideways glance, set about our magic-seeming backwards trot, away from our attachments, the trapping world, our silhouettes scudding like pirate ships toward the smog rosy light.
Wonderful. I wish I'd seen it. But you know what? Just listening, I feel like I had seen it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm thinking like, did I see it?
Oh, I'm so glad. It really was. I mean, like I just said magic in the last little piece, and it really was. It was like magic. It was these black and white, we were black and white nuns, and we were in a red dirt field. And it was like, it was just this outline, and we were just, you know, we were cut loose for the day, and we went crazy on the red dirt. So it was all very un-nun-like behavior, because... Yeah. You know, John O'Keefe was up to all kinds of wonderful poetic shenanigans, and it was meant to be an incantation to bring the moon out, and always on cue, the actual moon would come up. I mean, he designed it to happen at a certain time of day, and we, you know, timed it with the sunset and the moon coming up.
Jeez.
I know.
That is
so it was live.
That's
live.
Unbelievable.
Live theater.
Beth, how do you define subtext?
You know,
and I say that, I ask it, of course, because it's one of the sections of your of your books.
Right. It's one of the sections of my book, subtext, repertoire, and soliloquy. Subtext is the kind of undercurrent. In fact, you could make a case for the fact that in a lot of times in theater or in films, what you say is actually inconsequential. What's actually happening is subtext, be underneath what you mean, what it is that you mean or what you would say if you could say it. It's a kind of engine or a heat underneath your lines. So you can actually say the most banal things and have a powerful, brutal subtext, and and an audience will be able to pick up what it is that you are, what you really mean.
What would be the parallel in poetry?
I think that when you erase something from a poem, if you have edited out a line, it still exists as a kind of shadow that can act as a, you know, kind of resonance, like this invisible resonance. I mean, David St. John, who I just adore, is one of my wonderful teachers, used to talk about a poem as a mobile. Right. When a mobile is just flat on a table. Do you know this?
He talked about that very thing on this show.
Oh, did he really?
Yes. Please.
Well, okay. So I'll give you my version, or I'll just horribly bastardize it. You know, that you have a mobile that's on a table and it's just flat. And there might be interesting parts and colors and whatever, but it's just flat and it has no energy. But the minute you pick it up and those parts start to revolve around each other, that, you know, there's a kind of other kind of resonance that happens between those parts. And it also makes the entire structure kinetic. In fact, from every different kind of point of view, it becomes a different sculpture, just like with a poem. You might pick up a poem and one day be in a kind of mood, which is really maybe your own secret subtext, and you're in a kind of mood and you read this poem and you cry, and you don't even know, you're thinking, wait a minute, why is it hitting me this way? It didn't hit me this way the last time I read it. So I think there's a kind of energy underneath the poem that can, you know, sneak up and, you know, slay you or tear the top off your head.
Yes, I've heard that.
Yeah.
Great. This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, and we are listening to Beth Ruscio. Beth?
Yes?
Why do you write poetry?
You know, for a very long time, I was devoted. I mean, I still am. I still am a person that, you know, loves to be an interpretive artist. But I longed to be a creative artist, because the part about acting I hate is having to get hired. You can't really do it by yourself. I mean, you can, but then you're sort of crazy. You look like a homeless person. So I longed to be creative on my own terms. And I have to say, and here's my little story, I used to have this recurring dream where I would be in a house that was familiar. It was never the same house, but it was always a familiar house. And I would be walking through, and then suddenly I'd find, you know, a door, a hallway, you know, stairs, something that I never knew was there. And I open the door, and all of a sudden I'm in a room. And and in this dream, which I had many times, I would say, why don't I ever come in here? Why aren't I ever in this room? And I have to say, and I know it's going to sound mystical, but the minute that I committed to writing poetry and to be serious about it, I stopped having that dream. I'm in the room now. I'm in that room, the room I always wanted to be in.
Wow. That's wonderful. Beth, could you reach Strangled eventually?
Yes, I hope I can get through it. Strangled eventually. This is a noir poem.
All right.
Murder.
I'll dim the light.
I'll just close my eyes. Oh, wait a minute. I have to read.
Okay.
Murder works up an appetite. Strangled, no less. Those kitten kicks, the fake tussle for the car door. A girl gets banged around for real, all that pretend terror. A night shoot, pear blossom highway, factor in the desert. 3 a.m.'s nothing like 3 p.m. She's not dressed. She's draped in a low-cut handkerchief they call a costume. Just two swipes of Love That Red to keep her lips from turning blue. So cold, her gasps send up smoke signals in the key light. Not a rap in sight. No one to rescue her, save this miscast pretty boy killer. It's in the script. She croaks, but he's so green. He giggles, sorry, take after muff take. Cracks his knuckles, giggles more. Please kill me, she whimpers, teeth chattering next to his ear. You're trembling, he purrs. She could scratch his eyes out. I am starving, you doofus.
Is she you?
No, fortunately I wasn't, usually they succeeded in killing me pretty quickly.
Beth, what is the most useful thing that you learned from acting that you carried over into poetry?
Well,
you can pass on any of these questions,
no,
by the way.
I got to say, that one of the most useful, I'm just trying to think if this is an appropriate analogy. There's got to be something more, you know, eloquent than this. But G.W. Bailey once told me to pack my own chute, darling, which really basically meant, you know, that if you had a character that was going to do something or that you wanted them to do something, you shouldn't depend on other people to bring the stuff that you needed to do it. That if you, you know, that if you needed to, you know, jump out of an airplane, you better, you know, you damn better well pack your own parachute. So, but I'm not sure that that's a good analogy. I would say, let me think about it more.
No, that's great. I mean,
is it?
I guess it means that the poem is yours. And you are prepared to to delve...
Die for it.
Yes. Well, to delve into whatever... And only you are going, and your vision, and your thoughts, and your perception, and what notion you have about it is yours, and it's no one else's.
Well, and let me sort of give a corollary that kind of gives it a little bit of a slight that's good. That's a good interpretation. But let me give it a little curve. You know, there's such a thing in acting, having stakes, right. and it's true in drama as well as comedy, although you can make the argument that it's more important in comedy that your stakes be really high, that you want something really, really bad, like ludicrously bad, which is what can make it funny. And I think in a poem, it has to matter to you what you're writing about.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, I'm not after, you know, car chases and stunts and, you know, I'm really after candor and, you know, putting my heart into it. I mean, not to become sentimental, but to have actual sentiment, you know, to have it really count and mean something, to have something I want to impart to the listener, not to... You know, not like as a lecture, but as a, you know, here's an experience. It's like an intimate conversation with a stranger. And, you know, I think the best acting is that, too. You're having, even if you're in a monologue, you're having an intimate conversation that people are overhearing. Mm-hmm. And I think that the best poems feel like that it's being delivered just to you. Just to you. I mean, I think... That's the great power of it. I mean, I've been in audiences where I wrote a poem about this. Bridget Begin Kelly read this poem of hers called Song, and I just gasped at the swell of the poem. I just thought, oh!
Did you tell her?
I did. I mean, I followed her along like a puppy. She was up at Idlewild. I just couldn't get enough of her. And I wrote this poem, which is also in the manuscript, but all I'm saying is, you know, that poetry has that kind of power, and that's what good acting can have too. Both those, they're not non-exclusive. In fact, I think that being a poet has made me a better actor.
Hmm. Thank you, Beth Ruscio.
You're welcome.
My name's Paul Lieber. The name of the show is Why Poetry. And we've been listening to Beth Ruscio, and she's been reading from poems that will appear in the soon-to-be-published manuscript, Speaking Parts. And thank you, Beth. There.
Oh, wow. So we're done, huh?
And no, it continues. We just go on indefinitely. And thank you, John Snyder, for your work. And thank you, KPFK, for everything.
Hi, this is Lori Lewis. Tune into Folk Scene with Roz Larman Sunday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. for the best in traditional and contemporary music. Each week features a live guest segment right here on 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and 99.5 Ridgecrest, China Lake. Tune in to Folk Scene.